U.S. President Donald Trump on Sunday took a suddenly threatening tone toward China, declaring he could raise U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods by the end of the week. The warning comes as U.S.-China trade talks are due to resume this week and just 2 days after the president appeared optimistic about the outcome. But Sunday's announcement casts into doubt previous expectations that China and the United States were closing in on a deal.
The world's largest medical drone delivery service has been launched in Ghana, operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, meaning supplies are delivered as and when they're needed to some of the country's most isolated places. Zipline, a California-based robotics company, is leading the drone project. It has 4 distribution centers across the country, like here in Omanako. The centers aim to send supplies to 2,000 medical facilities within half an hour.
Passengers running for their lives Sunday as an Aeroflot superjet erupted in flames at a Moscow airport, a massive blaze that left 41 people dead. That's according to Russia's investigative committee, which is looking into the cause of the crash.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's May 6th. And it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day, another business week getting underway. And we're starting off this morning with the stocks tanking on trade and tariff news. We'll get to the markets momentarily this morning. Dow futures off about 500 points this morning. Negative markets all around the world as well. We were hoping to see stocks bounce back after declines last week, after those really strong unemployment numbers on Friday. The unemployment rate falling to 3.6%, the lowest number since December 1969. But we'll focus on trade this morning after the President Trump tweeted about that over the weekend yesterday. We'll get to that momentarily, as I said. In our CEO spotlight this morning, Justin Breen is here from Brepit Communications. It is the business of public relations, and we'll bring in Justin momentarily from the PPG Paints Green Room, where he's getting ready to go for the show this morning. A little bit later on this morning, as we mentioned, the jobs report will take a more closer look at how the jobs report impacts the Chicago area and the Midwest. Noah Bishkin will be here. He's the founder of Kraft Jack, the parent company of the company ImproveNet. We'll be focusing actually on the cost of renovations. A lot of people doing renovations this time of year and really kind of miss the mark when they plan for the funding of those projects. That'll be at about 5:38 this morning. Let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. As I mentioned, futures are negative this morning by about 500 points on the Dow, nearly 2% this morning. More than 2% on the NASDAQ, down 172 points, 2.25% on the S&P, nearly 2% lower this morning, heading to the opening bell. In Asia, markets are generally in the red as well, with the numbers out of China and Japan lower. We do have a couple of market holidays today. In Japan, the Tokyo Stock Exchange is closed, and in London, markets are closed there. But in the rest of Asia, lots of red. In China, down by nearly 6% and 2% and nearly 3% respectively in some of the other markets. Aside from London, in Europe, markets in Germany are lower by more than 2%, down nearly 253 on the DAX. The CAC off nearly 2%, 115 points. Oil in the United States is at $61.14 a barrel, down about 80 cents or 1.25%. Back to the tariff story this morning. Chinese media reporting the country's vice premier might shorten his planned visit to Washington for trade talks, if he comes at all. The South China Morning Post is reporting that the premier could still come to the U.S. this week for trade talks, but for a shorter visit than he had planned previously. After the president tweeted yesterday he's ready to raise tariffs on China if they don't agree on a trade deal, the paper's latest report says the chief negotiator in the trade talks between the U.S. and China was scheduled to arrive in Washington midweek and leave close to the weekend. But again, those travel plans are in somewhat of flux this morning. Top diplomats from the U.S. and other so-called Arctic nations are focusing on climate change and access to mineral wealth as they meet today in Stockholm. The Arctic Council representatives will discuss policies governing the polar region. Warming temperatures are thawing ice, and that's raising the possibility of harvesting undiscovered reserves of oil and gas, as well as huge deposits of zinc, iron, and other rare earth minerals. The Arctic Council is made up of the U.S., Canada, Russia, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Norway, Iceland, and the region's indigenous peoples. Let's begin this morning with our CEO spotlight here on the opening bell. It's the business of public relations. Now, oftentimes we see a story go viral, and the chances are there is a public relations expert somewhere in the mix. Joining us this morning from Chicago area's Brepik Communications is CEO Justin Breen to talk a little bit more about public relations. Justin, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we like having you in today. Just a little behind the scenes inside baseball stuff. Sometimes you help us find guests.
Right.
So talk to us a little bit about the business.
Well, I literally created my business model based on how PR firms annoyed me for 20 years when I was a journalist.
Right.
So basically created a new model that I thought would be effective if I was still a journalist. So typically PR firms send press releases to hundreds of journalists. And what that does is when you get hundreds of those a day, it annoys you and burns bridges forever. So I created a new model that is kind of the opposite, where you create real content and very strategically market it to media outlets and form real relationships.
Right. And that's kind of what I was getting at is you are in touch with us a couple of times a week sometimes.
Yep.
Whether it's on Twitter through an instant message or mm-hmm. through an email with Bennett, our producer, Bennett Wakenet, our producer. That's really how it's done, right? Because the email could just get lost in the mix, right?
Yep. And when you send a press release that's basically useless and only benefits the client, journalists are too smart to know, you know, what's real news and what's just complete garbage. So, again, like, the stories that my firm does, they're real stories with client information blended into it. And mm-hmm. I think that's the difference. And, you know, again, when I still consider myself a journalist, like people say, what are you? I guess technically I'm a PR firm, but really it's journalism with a little bit of a spin.
Brepik Communications, mm-hmm. LLC is the name of the company. Talk to us a little bit about the challenges of getting this going. I know we'll tell our listeners, too, that you're a former editor over at DNA Info, mm-hmm. which is no longer around, but also a newspaper guy from Northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. So the history goes back. What were the first steps to getting going here, and what kind of challenges did you face?
Good question. So I was a journalist for 20-plus years, and I incorporated April 16th, 2017. And I was still at DNA Info at the time in a full-time role. So for 2 months, I reached out to 5,000 people to get my first 5 clients.
Wow.
So it was that type of hustle and work ethic. I got my 5th client, making sure there was no conflict of interest with anything I did at DNA Info. But I got my 5th client on a Thursday. I resigned on Friday. And then Robert Feeder did a story the following Monday that I had started a PR firm.
Had you been thinking about it for a while? I mean, I guess you kind of, the DNA Info, to remind everybody, that was kind of a surprise. When it closed down, right? It was just like one day.
I was not surprised.
You weren't, okay.
I mean, I was a little surprised that it was that sudden, but mm-hmm. no, I was not surprised at all that it shut down.
Had you been thinking about this for a while and had mapped it out? To get the paperwork for an LLC going, you probably had to have like a plan in place.
So yes and no. So my wife and I were driving up to Kohler, Wisconsin. She surprised me for my 40th birthday. And that was right before April 16th, 2017. It was like a week before. I'm like, you know what? I just really want to go into business for myself. And it just popped into my head, Brepik, because BR are the first two letters of my last name. And I mean, if you follow me on social media, I constantly jokingly use Epic. I don't know why. I just have always done that. And so I'm like, oh, I'll just name the company Brepik. And it really has taken off pretty much right away after the first couple months. But it's just been so much fun. I have a really good family work-life balance and get to work with who I want to work with. And I think the most important thing is tell actual good stories, not, mm-hmm. you know, for lack of a better term, PR garbage.
Yeah, and really that's what attracts us to you.
Right.
Is because, you know, I'll see a story like we recently had a story on Chester Lawrence, I believe was his name.
Larry Chester.
Larry
yeah.
Chester.
Yep.
And it's something that I saw that you, one of your stories that was out there, and I'm like, this is an amazing story.
Great guy.
And again, it was about him creating his own business after he faced a little age discrimination in the market.
Yep. And he couldn't find a job.
Yeah.
Right. So Larry Chester, CFO, Simplified. This is exactly what I was talking about. He's in his 60s. He can't find a job. And now 10 years later, he's running a really super successful business that places part-time CFOs in companies all across the country. And he hires people in their 60s. So that's a good story. Mm-hmm. That's not nonsense PR stuff where it's like, oh, someone was named so-and-so or whatever. So really, the only useful skills I have in terms of real world stuff is I know what a good story is and that I just know how to send it out to media because I know which media will be interested in a story. So I'm good at this job and good as a dad, but really I'm not good at anything else. So people like laugh when I say that, but I'm really not kidding.
Well, that's all you really need though for success, right? I mean, if you want to talk about successful businesses, there's always sort of that. I don't want to necessarily call you a visionary, but it's people who are super focused on one area that they do really well.
And I am super focused. So during the process of building this business, I meet with very, very high-level entrepreneurs all the time, not to have them become clients, but just to listen to them and hear their stories. And the two best pieces of advice I got were from some very successful people. And one is do what you're really good at and what you like to do. So all I'm really good at is writing these stories and pitching them. That's really what I'm really – and I really like to do it. And then the other bit of advice was when you start a company, it takes 2 full years to really get used to it. So my company has always done well, and knock on wood, I'm very thankful for that. But it just passed the 2-year mark, and now I really feel like it's really humming along. And that's evident by tons of new clients lately as well.
But in the beginning, back to what you said about sending out 5,000 emails.
LinkedIn messages, emails, Facebook. And I have 30,000 followers on social media, so a lot of them went to those folks. But constant networking groups, all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, just constantly. And meeting would go to another meeting, to another meeting, to another meeting. And then it might not go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, obviously, when you don't know if something's going to work, it can be very deflating. But, you know, the key to an entrepreneur, a really good one, is you never give up, ever, no matter what. And frankly, like, my company's been more successful than most entrepreneurs that start out in their first 2 years. It's pretty rare to have this type of success. And I talk to entrepreneurs who've, like, struggled for 5, 10, 15 years before they finally did it. And it's very inspirational when you hear those type of stories, because it inspires you to never give up.
You said that you got 5 responses out of the 5,000.
Five
clients.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That would in itself, I think, be a little deflating, right? a whole lot deflating.
Yeah. And so if you can't handle rejection, I would say do not become an entrepreneur. Because even though I have a ton of new clients lately, and it's my business is, you know, I never thought it would be this successful. Mm-hmm. It's still mostly rejection. And you just have to get used to that and just like, okay, fine. It's no big deal.
One of the things that I think that I found cool, and if you can go to your website, brepicllc.com, there is, you kind of go through the steps of your of doing it. And I think that's kind of cool for somebody to see.
Not hiding anything.
Yeah, who's interested in PR wants to know how it all works.
Yep.
So walk us through so you get a client. Mm-hmm. What's the first thing you do with them?
Yep. So, and let me just tell you the background of that, because I cannot tell you how many potential clients come up to me and they say, we talked to this other PR firm. We have no idea what they do. I go, well, I don't know what they do either, because literally I had to deal with this for 20 years as a journalist. So literally it's a 4-step process. I work with the client to develop a list of story ideas. My firm writes the story. It goes through an editing process. It goes on the client's website as a link. I take that link and market it strategically to media. If media is interested, I put them in touch with the client. Super effective. I'm not hiding anything. I don't care. I know that it does very well. I'm doing very well with it. And you know what? I feel like you said, it's kind of like a visionary type thing.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about the relationships you have with media. How do you get it to the right person at the right place?
So the only way my brain works is what's a good story and then who would be a good fit for this. Mm-hmm. Just for doing this for 20 years, when I was at DNA Info, I would pitch the stories I wrote after they got published to other media outlets because I wanted DNA Info's name out there. Mm-hmm. And that actually led to DNA Info getting a lot of coverage as first reported by DNA Info. So this has always been a skill set for me, not even knowing I would have my own business.
I know we talked about social media being a part of this, is reaching out on Twitter and other places. Mm-hmm. You have to be kind of an expert in some of those areas,
too. Oh, yes. Yeah. And so the biggest game changer is LinkedIn. Wow. It is, I mean, has led to some huge contracts. Just posting things. And I can't tell you how many people I run into that don't use LinkedIn effectively for business. And it's a huge, huge mistake. Because what happens is the people that like those posts are potential clients and then also journalists as well. Because journalists, as you know, they're constantly on their computer or phone looking for story ideas.
When you say we don't use it effectively, what are some of the mistakes people make on LinkedIn?
Posting stupid things. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'll post really, like, interesting content. Photos of me with a new client, a story that it was picked up on WGN Radio. A picture of downtown Chicago that looks nice. You'd be amazed that those get thousands of views. So I have a full-time job running a company. In and out of the business, and then social media for me is a full-time job, but it pays off big time.
Yeah, it feels like it. And if you again, back to the webpage, you have not only local media pick up stories, but somehow you've managed to get in on national media as well.
Right. So it's been an interesting case study. As the business has evolved, I've evolved in terms of learning what works. And even me personally, my wife and I were on the Today Show because of our 50. We went out once a week last year without the kids, 52 dates, 52 weeks. And that got on the Today Show because the Chicago Tribune did the story. And then all these other outlets saw it and they wanted to do their own version. So that's what happens in media is usually a smaller publication will do it and then a bigger fish will see it and they'll do their own version. And so it'll get to the national level. But what's really interesting is when I was a journalist, I was not like that. I was like, I'm only doing it if it's an exclusive.
Right.
But it's not like that now. Media is so desperate for good content that will get shared on Facebook pages and on Twitter and get those page views back to the site that they don't really care if other outlets do it.
Right. It's almost like we've become sort of an offshoot of social media.
So no doubt.
Something goes viral.
Yep.
We want it viral as well.
Of course.
Want the virus as well.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, it could be a term called like pack journalism. You know, you see that kind of thing with, covering City Hall or whatever, but it really has become like that with these good stories. So, and those are the types of stories I wrote at DNA Info, where it was, inspirational, human interest, or kind of silly. And I just knew that those stories were interesting and things that people would spend 30 to 40 seconds reading, which is all you really get nowadays anyway.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs who spend 24 hours a day working.
Right.
They're always busy.
Not me.
and that's what I think is cool about your story, right? Is you've not only have you started this new company, but you've talked about your wife setting aside those date nights,
yep,
but you're also always posting pictures with your kids.
Yep.
And you've managed to cut out time for personal life.
Yeah, so love my wife Sarah, my two sons, Jake who's 6 and Chase who's 4. Can't believe they've gotten that old that quickly, but so I look at any potential new client as, and it's pretty simple for me. I'm very black and white. There's no gray with me. I think that's why the business, mm-hmm, in part has been successful. But I look at a potential client. I go, if they're going to take away quality time away from my children with me, and they're going to cause me problems, I absolutely will not sign with them. I'm not going to deal with that. So I'm very fortunate that I'm in a place now where I've built the business to a point where I don't have to deal with that. I'm the room parent, the book fair chair, communications chair for the PTO. Like, I'm the only man. It's me and like 39 women, which that's way more intimidating than meeting a potential new client, by the way. But I do it because I just really like spending time with my kids. And my 6-year-old, he's kind of like me, where he's like not warm and fuzzy and stuff. But when I see him at school, like lunch volunteering, he'll give me a hug.
Wow, that's
good. And it's very rare for him to do it. But it's like I almost start crying because he doesn't usually do that. But it's well worth it.
Is he the one that's the knife thrower? I think I saw a video.
That is the knife thrower. Yes, but the 4-year-old now is holding a plastic knife. So like, I'm one of those parents. So my dad was 61 when I was born, and he was a World War II veteran. So he just kind of let us, like, you know, he's just like, let us watch Platoon. And so like, I'm like that with my kids too. Mm. Like, their favorite movie was Bloodsport.
Oh, wow.
It's like,
wow.
Yeah. So we're just roughhousing and beating the, you know, bleep out of each other constantly. But it's like, it's just fun. My wife isn't used to it yet, but she understands we're just wild children, basically, including me.
Talk to us a little bit more about turning down clients. What are the criteria for that? I know you talked about the time part of it, but
time, and if they can't afford me.
Yeah. Or they don't. Do you ever say, okay, well, what this client is selling, I really don't want to be a part of, that kind of thing.
And there's that too. Yeah. So, that's a good question. So during this year's process, I've really tried to write down goals and values. And one of the things is I'm not going to work with someone unless they have forward-thinking values. But I do get calls for crisis communications, and I don't really do that. I'd rather not do that, and I have a very good network of people that I'll just send it to them. And that's another thing I wanted to bring up too, is like when you start a business, you don't necessarily know which groups to join. But it's been so important for me that about 6-7 months ago, I found the right group of people where they're high-level entrepreneurs, they value what I do, they're an endless stream of referrals, and they're just good people. It's a group called Provisors. So basically, it matches top lawyers at firms or top financial advisors, and then there's entrepreneurs, marketing experts, and it's very collaborative. The smaller networking groups I had been in, it's the take first mentality, which is not, that's something I don't want to deal with. But these folks and Provisors, it's been a real game changer for my company because these folks are just awesome human beings. They're my friends, and they just care about people and giving each other business. So Provisors is like, I cannot recommend that enough. If you're like serious about making money and then serious about really growing your business, that's the place to go for sure.
And how much of the networking is done face-to-face? Because I hear a lot of people complain that some of the networking organizations are online, that they...
I don't even know what that means. Oh, okay. So, like, no, Provisors and some of the other groups I'm in, you go to a morning meeting, 7 a.m., so you have your own group, and then you can guest at other groups. So I live in Glenview, and I run every morning outside no matter what. So I'll wake up at 3 in the morning to go to these meetings because otherwise I'll get caught in traffic. And so I go 3 to 4 times a month to these meetings. And so you meet in person with all these amazing people, and then afterwards you set up like a lunch or a coffee date. It's called a troika with 2 or 3 of the members. So you really get to know people on a personal level. And it's a huge difference. Like you said, online networking, my relationships have been good with media online, but like in terms of like potential clients, it's face to face. You have to get out there and you have to hustle every day.
So what's next? I'm guessing you want to grow your business, right?
Everybody asks me this. Yeah. So I have it in place where if I want to scale it, I have people that I have signed up to be reporters as contract reporters if I want to do that. I don't need to do that right now. I could do that. I work with very high-level entrepreneurs. Half of them tell me under no circumstances should you scale it because you're doing really well and you see your kids all the time. And others say if you really want to go for it, you have to scale. So, I mean, it's 2 years old. It's doing well. It's still definitely growing, and obviously I'm always hustling, always looking for new clients, but I mean, I'm not looking a year in advance. I'm just not at that stage yet.
Are you done with journalism?
Well, see, that's the question I get asked all the time. Yeah. I'm still doing journalism. Yeah. That's the thing. So, like, I think that's the difference between what I'm doing and a lot of PR firms. Like, the stories that my firm Brepik does, they're essentially the exact same story I did at DNA Info.
Here's a question from the flip side. Let's say I'm somebody looking for a PR representative. Mm-hmm. I'm a company or an individual. Mm-hmm. What are the tips that I should be – what are the questions that I should be asking you, things I should be looking for if I'm going to hire a PR person?
Ask what they do, because I'm telling you, some PR firms have no idea what they – and if they're all across the board, me personally, I wouldn't recommend that. I would recommend someone who's very focused like me. In terms of I'm really good at this, and if I'm not good at it, I know someone who is good at that, and I can refer them to you.
So you're the CEO. I'm guessing you're the COO, the CFO, human resources guy as well.
I have a website person, and my father-in-law helped me set up the business side. He's a CPA/financial advisor, so thank goodness for Arnold Krauss for sure.
Well, it's good meeting you, and please keep turning out these really great stories, and because we love telling them just as much as you do, and we're thankful for that.
Well, I really appreciate it. And then this isn't really work for me. I just enjoy doing it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, we can tell. Come back and see us sometime.
Will do. Promise.
Justin Breen, the CEO of Brepik Communications in Chicago. You can find them online at BrepikLLC.com. And make sure you follow them on Twitter as well, BrepikCom, C-O-M-M. We're going to link out to the interview later this morning with the Opening Bell podcast, where we will have more of our conversation with Justin Breen in our CEO Spotlight Expanded version.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Let's strap on our tool belts and get out our calculators. The focus now on home improvement. Believe it or not, a lot of people don't know what it really costs to do a home remodeling project. To talk about it this morning, Noah Mishkin is with us, the founder of CraftJack, the parent company of ImproveNet. We're going to talk a little bit about a survey and some really cool numbers that appear on ImproveNet about this morning. But first, let's welcome in Noah. Noah, good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You know, I'm one of those people that I always miss the price as well whenever I have a project going on. But the thing that surprises me is that more people, make sure I get this right, overestimate the cost of a project, or is it underestimate the cost of a project? It's underestimate.
Yeah, it's surprising, isn't it? The results were that we found homeowners are typically overestimating prices, which is, I would have thought the opposite, that you would underestimate for the cost of remodeling, and most people don't really know what a project will cost. But that was surprising to me too, right?
Yeah, I just always assume it's going to be more expensive. But the survey that appears on ImproveNet and you guys commissioned shows about 15% is what the overestimate is for remodel cost.
That's right. And actually, it's funny because a few years ago I had this idea, this thought that there are three things that we as human beings are most surrounded by in our daily life, but typically know the least about. And that would be, in my opinion, maybe your car. You know, you're driving it mostly every day and something goes wrong. You got to talk to a mechanic to figure out what's wrong with that. And your body, right? You're surrounded by nothing more in your life than your own body. But when something goes wrong, you got to talk to somebody. And then the third thing that I thought of is someone's house. Something breaks, and most often you're going to have to talk to a professional to come and fix it for yourself. So when it comes to your house, you're going to talk to somebody, but you're going to find out what prices are. And we did find that people were pretty off, and that might actually lead to people hesitating to do any kind of significant remodeling project, this idea that's going to cost more than they feel like they can afford. But in reality, it's going to cost a little less than what the survey has shown us.
Yeah, and going a little bit deeper into there, the labor costs is where people overestimate by a lot. Actual labor costs about 36% lower than people thought. What do you think is behind that?
I think that there's just a lack of awareness or understanding of what goes into it, how long something would take, what people's time is worth, honestly. What surprised me, actually, was how accurate typical homeowners were on the cost for materials. They were only off by about 2%, which in my mind is, that's pretty spot on, if I can estimate within 2%. So people got the materials pretty spot on, but the labor costs, yeah, I mean, you know, you never know what's going to cost. When I hire a babysitter to watch my kids, I never know what someone's going to charge, and they could be wildly off. So I think when it comes to just people's cost for their labor, their time, it just varies a lot.
Are there certain projects that are overestimated more than others? Like, for instance, do people miss the numbers most on the kitchen or the bathroom or the bedroom, or do they all come in about the same?
Actually, they varied quite a bit, and what we found was the widest margin of error was the bedroom. People were pretty much guessing about 42% off by the cost of bedroom model, which is sort of surprising. There's not a lot that goes into remodeling a bedroom. If you're taking into account like a master bathroom, prices are going to, you know, jump there. But for the most part, it's a pretty low cost renovation area.
Yeah,
people are pretty spot on when it gets to like kitchens and stuff like that. That wasn't too bad, about 13% off.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's because, you know, we can go online and see how much kitchen stuff costs, some of the materials. As you were telling us about the materials part of that, I was thinking, well, I've done that. I've gone either to a place and kind of priced out the materials or done that online. That probably helps a lot of people out.
Well, you know, actually, I find myself wandering the aisles of any of the big stores out there with materials. And when I want to get into a project, a lot of times I start my own as a DIY, a do-it-yourself, where I'll get into it, see how far I can get. But at some point, it's more like a DIY, why didn't I call somebody? And so from that point, I've already done the research. I've probably bought a lot of the materials myself, and I just need somebody to come in and say, show me where I messed up and help me fix this and finish it.
Is this a geographical thing? I'm thinking some areas of the country might be more busy with contractors than others, and some places might be more expensive than others. How does geography play into this?
It varies. I mean, what we find is that obviously in any of the major metropolitan areas around the continent of the United States, you're going to have a lot more work to do as a general contractor, and prices are going to be in demand. So as you get into more of the rural areas, there is less of, I would say, like a competitive strategy there. So it does vary pretty greatly around the United States.
Well, here's the million-dollar question. How can we, as consumers, what are the tips for us to not only find the best price, but the right price when we're doing home renovation projects?
That's a great question, Steve. So I would take it pretty much like any other major purchase. You want to be really well-informed, a conscious consumer. That's really one of our main goals on ImproveNet, is to help homeowners get more of the information before they even tackle a project. And just like the survey itself showed us that a typical homeowner is off by what they estimate a project will cost, that's what we do, is we try to help homeowners get the information before they even jump into a project, which means, you know, what things might cost, how to plan for a project, how to prepare for a project, maybe how long it would take. Do I have to move out of my house during this kind of project? Any of these questions that you might be asking yourself. But in addition to that, the biggest kind of feedback and suggestions that I can give to any homeowner out there is to shop around. Just remember that if somebody gets in front of you and gives you an estimate, they're going to want your business, and you should consider that. But also, it's the timeline is up to you. There's no sense of urgency unless it's like an emergency project, like your roof is caving in. So take your time, and you want to evaluate the contractors that you have coming into your house. And just like I said, when you're buying a car or buying your house originally, you're going to take your time to shop around and ask all the right questions. So you want to vet your contractors and ask them, you know, are you licensed, insured, bonded? Ask for referrals, read about them online, see their portfolio, because sometimes when you're looking for a contractor, it's about the bottom line, what they cost. But oftentimes it's really about finding that perfect match, a contractor that will understand your vision and help you execute on that on the same page. So find out who it is you're talking to and if they're the right person for that project.
Well, talk to us a little bit more about ImproveNet and CraftJack. One of the things I like about ImproveNet is there are calculators there, there are cost guides. You can also search for pros as well in the area. But the calculator part of this and the cost guides, those are key to making sure you have the best information when you start interviewing people.
That's right. We update those pretty regularly, and what we want to do is find out, just like your previous question about what it costs to do a project in different areas, we're going to lay that out for you by geo averages and by size of the project. So, you know, ImproveNet, it was really started as a consumer-facing brand behind CraftJack, and CraftJack is our pro-facing brand. So that's where contractors use our service to find new projects and opportunities to help grow their business. And ImproveNet is really for the consumer, for homeowners. And our main goal there is to give homeowners as much information as we possibly can to prepare them, and then ultimately help them find a local pro for them. So, you know, the whole goal of ImproveNet is just to give them that information. And that's where we're at today in 2019. Everyone wants information. Everyone wants to have that kind of control and sense of awareness of what they're about to get into and how they're going to control the project and the process itself. So the calculators are there to just help homeowners before they even talk to a contractor, give them a general idea of what they might spend. You know, a lot of times when before you might have to remodel your bathroom or your kitchen, it's not really about if you want to or not. Sometimes it's just about, can we afford to? And you know, you got to find that out. You got to talk to a contractor. But the first step is to do some of your own research. And that's what we can offer on ImproveNet, some of that information.
Yeah, and we're going to link out in the podcast the actual before and after cost estimates of the story that we're talking about today. But I want to close by asking, you know, you touched on a little bit there. With the economy going really well, is now the time to do these kinds of projects? Or is there an ebb and flow in terms of the best time to do these things with the economy?
This is actually one of my favorite topics to talk about because, and I know that we're wrapping up here, but around the recession of 2008, 9, 10, 11, people were asking me the same kind of question: is now the right time to renovate, to fix, to buy? What are we talking about here? And it's actually ImproveNet, CraftJack, it's a great business anytime. on the economy, because either we're in a great economy and people are buying and selling houses, and anytime you're buying a house or even selling for that matter, you're going to oftentimes want to fix up some of the neglected areas, some things that you want to customize and make them your own. And in a downward economy, instead of buying and taking that kind of financial risk, you're going to fix up and remain in the house that you have today. So in either economic climates, you're going to be finding local contractors to help remodel, renovate, fix up, and just touch up in the latest trends within your house. So honestly, like, our service is great all year round, any kind of a climate. So.
Yeah, Noah, great having you on this morning. You've got me excited to start a project today, so we appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. You know where to find us.
All right. Noah Mishkin, the founder of CraftJack, the parent company of ImprovedNet. You can find more online at ImprovedNet.com, and you can also head over to CraftJack, CraftJack.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses when the opening bell rings a little bit later on Wall Street. Dow futures are off 500 points this morning, nearly 2%. S&P futures down nearly 2% as well. NASDAQ futures off nearly 2.25%. A rough day of trading as well around the globe in Asia and in Europe. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The latest development on China-U.S. trade negotiations, the president putting more pressure on China by saying the U.S. tariffs on certain Chinese products will increase to 25% on Friday, and that more Chinese goods will face additional tariffs. And as far as the opening bell prices on the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, well, they're looking at a mixed close on Friday, and so it'll probably be a mixed trade when they open today. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, May the 6th. Job openings, producer prices, and inflation are all in the economic spotlight this week. Job openings for March are due tomorrow. April producer price indexes will be out on Thursday. The April inflation rate coming on Friday. On the calendar today, a couple of Fed speakers, Charles Evans, Patrick Harker. On the earnings calendar, Cisco, Tyson Foods, Del Taco, and Hertz Global, all reporting quarterly financial earnings. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, May the 6th.